Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 14th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's start out with the weather as we always do. Today in Sioux City, the high of 38 with a low of 28. Snow, blowing snow, 1 to 3 inches. On Friday, a high of 30 with a low of 24. Very windy with snow at times. Saturday continued cloudy with a high of 30 and a low of 21. Sunday a high of 35 and a low of 23. Monday there will be a little bit more snow in the afternoon with a high of 36 and a low of 18. Let's turn back to our front page and read the mini editorial for everybody. This mini comes from Paul Royson of Sioux City. He writes, "What a shocker, not really. Donald Trump will not attend the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. Expected shameful behavior. Who really wants him there? Continues his shameful legacy. How embarrassing, though, for the United States." Going back to our front page, we have an article by Brett Hayworth who writes, "Dort Professor, Impeachment and Overreach. Taylor present for Trump's 2016 shooting remark." Sioux Center, Iowa. Back on January 23, 2016, about a week before the Iowa caucuses, then-Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump stood on a stage at Dort University and delivered a colorful but controversial line that implied societal norms didn't apply to him. He said, "I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot anybody, and I wouldn't lose any voters," the New York businessman told a standing room only crowd. Turning to page A4 here. Trump told this crowd at the conservative private college in Sioux Center, "I was in the front row when he said that," Jeff Taylor, a political science professor at Dort, recalled Wednesday. "I laughed, and most of the audience laughed. It was a joke." On Wednesday, nearly 5 years after that infamous appearance at Dort, the U.S. House voted 232 to 197 to impeach Trump following a violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol last week. Taylor, who has monitored years of controversial statements and actions by Trump, said the president's remarks to his followers just before they marched on the Capitol do not rise to the level of misdeeds that warrant impeachment. "It would have been different if he had told the crowd, 'I want you to break into the Capitol. I want you to bring guns,'" said Taylor in a phone interview, taking a break during his first week as a Republican state senator for a district covering several Northwest Iowa counties. Democrats accused Trump, with his unfounded allegations of election fraud, of inciting the mob, which stormed past police and breached the Capitol on January 6th. Some entered the House and Senate chambers, and the siege left 5 dead, including a Capitol police officer. Taylor, who continues to teach at Dort, says that Democrats are off base by pursuing impeachment. The final section of Article 2 in the Constitution, he noted, specifies that the president shall be removed from office if convicted in an impeachment trial of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Taylor said that Trump certainly spoke passionately to a crowd of devoted supporters, while adding that his comments do not rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. Taylor said he would hold to the same opinion was if the president was instead a Democrat. "I would have thought that impeachment was overreach and unnecessary," he said. Harkening back to Trump's now infamous line at Dort in January 2016, Taylor said he didn't think anyone took it literally, but he soon saw many media outlets such as CNN reported the "shoot somebody" comments with wooden literalism. "It certainly lives on, that utterance," Taylor said, and he pointed to it as symptomatic of Trump's statements that people view far differently, in part depending upon whether they like Trump. "It is his weakness and his strength. He cuts both ways," Taylor said. "Trump tends to invite hatred for at least half the country. The political science professor said Republican Ronald Reagan was said to be the Teflon president since criticism of him never seemed to stick. Taylor said that Trump has some of that same trait, but not to the same magnitude as Reagan. Trump is much more polarizing than Reagan, he said. Many congressional Republicans continue to assert impeachment should not be applied to Trump, so the country can heal in the final days before Joe Biden becomes president on January 20th. For rank-and-file Republicans nationwide and in Siouxland, Taylor said 80% or more usually are on board with Trump's policies, so they overlook his controversial remarks. They are aware of the comments, but they can live with it because of policy reasons, he said. Turning back to page A1, our next article by Brett Hayworth of the Journal, Taylor's deployment to leave void on board. Sioux City, heading towards a military overseas deployment, the exit of Jeremy Taylor could leave the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors shorthanded for the next 300 to 400 days, should a temporary board member not be appointed. Taylor announced in the weekly Tuesday meeting that his last meeting will be January 19th, then 2 days later he will begin a deployment to the Middle East for up to 400 days. This will be done in his role as chaplain for the 734th RSG Iowa Army National Guard. My anticipation right now is potentially between 10 and 12 months, but the situation and environment we are going into is fluid, Taylor said. There are 5 county supervisors, Taylor explained. State code says the remaining board members have the ability during his deployment departure to appoint someone temporary to fill the position. Then on Taylor's return, he would be reinstated as supervisor. Board Chairman Rocky DeWitt did not express an opinion about how to address the imminent departure of Taylor, who he called our in-house chaplain. Supervisor Keith Raddick said the 4 supervisors should play it by ear and see over the next 2 to 3 months if they see the necessity of appointing someone in Taylor's absence. Taylor, 42, and his wife, Kim, have several children. The 2021 year will mark the second straight year in which there were only 4 supervisors for several months. Taylor, in late January 2020, resigned from the County Board District 2 seat following a voter registration challenge related to which of 2 homes in different districts constituted his legal residence. That left a vacancy through the budget-setting months until a special election in July rested in Justin Wright winning the District 2 post. After Taylor lost his bid that began in mid-2019 to win the Republican nomination for the Iowa 4th Congressional District in June primary voting, he was selected in August by a special Republican county panel to be the county party's nominee for District 3. He won a 4-year term in the November election. On Tuesday, Taylor said he had been up front with Republicans who wanted him to be the nominee, and then in election talks that he could have a deployment at some point. I made that clear, he said. Turning now to the next page. Sorry, folks, I'm having trouble with the electronic newspaper today. Siouxland GOP House members vote against SNAP impeachment by Dave Dreesen. The 4 GOP House members who represent Siouxland all opposed the impeachment of President Donald Trump on Wednesday. Representative Randy Feenstra of Iowa, Dusty Johnson of South Dakota, and Jeff Fortenberry and Adrian Smith of Nebraska were among 197 Republicans who voted against impeaching Trump for a second time. 10 GOP House members broke with their party to join 222 Democrats in support of articles of impeachment that accused Trump of inciting his followers who carried out a violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol last week. In statements, none of the tri-state congressmen defended Trump or even mentioned him by name. They cited the timing of the impeachment just days before the January 20th inauguration of Joseph Biden, and also warned such a divisive vote would drive the country further apart. Feenstra, a first-term congressman who represents the sprawling 4th District in northwest and north-central Iowa, said in a statement, Trump has committed to a peaceful transition of power, only has 7 days left in his term. It is time for our country to come together and move forward, not to pursue divisive and rushed political exercises, Feenstra said in the statement. It has been a challenging year, but we must not forget that we are one nation under God, and I am confident that together we can work towards a brighter future. Representative Adrian Smith, who represents Nebraska's sprawling 3rd District, which includes large parts of northeast Nebraska, called the events of last Wednesday nothing short of horrific. I am appalled at what I saw last week and fully support the prosecution of every participant and planner of the insurrection, Smith said in the statement. Snap impeachment, however, without a complete investigation, sets a dangerous precedent. This vote may feel politically expedient, but this is not the correct way to address the violence, nor will it bring our country together. Fortenberry, who represents Nebraska's 1st District, which includes Thurston County, said in a statement that impeachment will only deepen the trauma of an America already wrecked by political violence. Our objective should be this: restore peace in our country, restore confidence in our government, restore decency and decorum, Fortenberry said in the statement. Johnson, South Dakota's lone representative, said the Trump supporters who turned to violence must be held accountable for their actions, although political leaders deserve some blame as well. That was true as violence rocked our cities last summer, and it is just as true now, Johnson said in the statement. But a snap impeachment is the wrong approach. There's only 1 week remaining in Trump's term. It is an act sure to divide our country, and Democrat leaders are making a mistake in pursuing it. Murder charge filed against teen by Nick Hytrek. Prosecutors on Wednesday charged a Sioux City teenager with murder for a New Year's Day shooting that left another teen dead and 3 other people injured. Later in the day, Sioux City police officers arrested 2 more teens believed to have been involved in the shooting on murder and other charges. Woodbury County Attorney Patrick Jennings filed a trial information document charging Christopher Morales with 1st-degree murder, going armed with intent, and 3 counts of reckless use of a firearm. District Judge Zachary Hindman set Morales' bond at $1 million and scheduled his arraignment for Jan 27th in Woodbury County District Court. If found guilty of 1st-degree murder, Morales would face a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. The other charges are Class C and Class D felonies with prison sentences of 10 and 5 years. At 5:25 p.m., police officers located Morales' brother, Carlos, 18, and Anthony Bauer, 18, also known as Tony Diaz, in a car on the 3100 block of Floyd Boulevard. Both teens were arrested on charges of 1st-degree murder, intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, and 3 counts of reckless use of a firearm. Court documents containing more details about their involvement in the shooting had not yet been filed Wednesday that evening. 2 others in the car were detained as part of the investigation and released without charges, police said. Christopher Morales is accused of forcing a person to walk into a house at 2637 Walker Street just after midnight on January 1st, before he and others fired at least 27 shots into the house with a 9mm handgun and an assault-style rifle. One of those shots struck and killed Mia Critis, 18, who was among 20 to 25 people attending a party at the house. 3 others struck by gunfire continue to recover from their wounds, the Sioux City Police Department said in a news release on Wednesday. Detectives are not seeking any other suspects, but continue to search for people who were at the party at the time of the shooting and anyone else who might provide information about the incident. Christopher Morales was arrested January 3rd after officers who were responding to a call at 19th and Pierce Streets saw him walk past and continually look back at them, remembering his name as a person of interest in another investigation. The officers approached Morales, who fled after they told him they were going to check him for weapons. Officers quickly apprehended him, found a gun inside his jacket, and arrested him. After seizing the firearm, detectives linked the gun and Morales to the Walker Street shooting, and on January 5th arrested him on charges of in connection with the shooting. He faces charges of being an adjudicated delinquent in possession of a firearm, interference with official acts, and carrying a dangerous weapon in connection with his original arrest. Next article by Next Hightrick. Nick Hightrick is about COVID in our area. COVID county sees decline in COVID-19 hospitalizations. South Dakota's current total is 104,195. Nebraska, 177,670. Iowa, 300,319 positive cases. Hightrick writes, the COVID-19 roller coaster ride continues in Woodbury County. The percentage of COVID-19 tests coming back positive in Woodbury County continued to decline Wednesday after a recent upward climb. The number of patients hospitalized with a respiratory illness in Sioux City's two hospitals also has dropped in the past week. The 14-day average positivity rate for Woodbury County dropped to 15.4% Wednesday, a week after it stood at 17%. It had been 13.5% on December 30th. The 7-day average shows the drop in the overall percentage of Woodbury County tests. In the past week, an average of 12% of tests have come back positive. The drop is good news, but infection rates remain high. Health officials have said positivity rates above 5% are a concern. The Siouxland District Health Department on Wednesday reported 40 COVID patients hospitalized in either Unity Point St. Luke's and Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center in Sioux City, 28 of them hospitalized due to the illness. The hospitals had 52 COVID patients a week ago. Hospitalizations across Northwest Iowa have remained steady during the past week. The Iowa Department of Public Health reported that the number of patients hospitalized in Region 3 of Iowa's Regional Medical Coordination Centers, a grouping that includes several Northwest Iowa counties, was 89, up from 77 a day earlier. There were 94 COVID patients in the region's hospitals a week ago. The IDPH reported that as of 6 p.m. Wednesday, 14 patients had been admitted to hospitals in the region in the past 24 hours, up from 8 in the previous 24-hour period. Two COVID-related deaths were reported in the Siouxland Wednesday. Plymouth County had its 67th death, and Dixon County in Nebraska recorded its 8th death, according to state statistics. Here's the graphic, which tells us the number of positive cases per county in our area and the number of deaths. Yankton County, South Dakota, has had 2,601 cases with 27 deaths. Clay County, South Dakota, has had 1,698 cases with 12 deaths. Union County has had 1,739 cases with 30 deaths. Cedar County, Nebraska, has had 759 cases with 10 deaths. Dixon County, Nebraska, 557 cases with 8 deaths. Wayne County, 962 cases with 6 deaths. Thurston County, 972 cases with 9 deaths. Dakota County, Nebraska, has had 3,708 cases with 67 deaths. Here now are our Iowa counties. Lyon County has had 1,327 cases with 32 deaths. Osceola, 631 cases, 9 deaths. Dickinson County, 1,828 cases with 22 deaths. Sioux County, 4,512 cases with 51 deaths. O'Brien, 1,672 cases with 54 deaths. Clay, 1,643 cases with 19 deaths. Plymouth County, 3,475 cases with 67 deaths. Cherokee County, Iowa, 1,364 cases with 25 deaths. Buena Vista County, 3,878 cases with 29 deaths. Woodbury County, 12,849 cases with 179 deaths. Ida County, 731 cases with 30 deaths. Sac County, 1,094 cases with 15 deaths. Monona County, 607 cases with 16 deaths. Crawford County, Iowa, 2,265 cases total with 22 deaths. Turning now to some briefs. From Primgar, Iowa, authorities seek help finding missing girls. Authorities in O'Brien and Osceola counties are seeking help in finding two missing teenage girls. Paige Amelia Bergstrom, spelled P-A-I-J-E, maybe that's Paige Amelia Bergstrom, and Dakota Rose Mentor left Sheldon High School at 8:30 a.m. Monday and were last seen at 3 p.m. that day at a friend's home in Estherville, Iowa, according to a post on the O'Brien County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. The girls said they were going to Mankato and Worthington in Minnesota and then to Oregon. They were driving a red four-door 2003 Pontiac Grand Am GT with Iowa blackout license plates IZV319. Bergstrom, 17, is 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighs 105 pounds, and has blue eyes. Mentor, 17, is 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighs 110 pounds, and has brown hair and brown eyes. It is possible that the girls have changed their hair color, the sheriff's office said. Anyone who sees either girl or knows their whereabouts should call the Bryan County Sheriff's Office at 712-757-3415 or the Osceola County Sheriff's Office at 712-754-2556. The next brief, Sioux City Police seek information on homicide. Sioux City Police are asking for the public's help for information about a December 1st homicide. The body of Pastor Daniel Hardin, age 60, was found December 1st in an apartment at 2601 Douglas Street. The Sioux City Police Department said shortly after the body was found that no suspects had been identified. A cash reward is available for tips that lead to an arrest. Anyone with information can call Crime Stoppers at 712-258-8477 or submit a tip online at siouxcitypolice.com/crimestoppers. No suspects have been identified, according to a Sioux City Police Department news release. Here's the quote of the day from Francis of Assisi, an Italian saint. He lived 1182 to 1226. He said, "Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love." Today's Bible verse is Psalm chapter 100, verse 3. "Know that the Lord is God. It is He who made us, and we are His. We are His people, the sheep of His pasture." Since most of the news today is national, I'm going to have to go ahead and read a sports story before we get to the obituaries. The Siouxland Athlete of the Week story by Zach James. Spartan senior McCall, resilient after sophomore injury. 2 years ago, West Monona High School senior Mallory McCall had to climb a mental mountain after breaking her right arm. McCall broke her arm in December 2018, and that put her out for the rest of the season. She had to learn a couple of skills over again, but the journey she went on has paid off for the Spartan senior. McCall has 319 points after a 51-50 loss against Westwood on Tuesday, and those 319 points put McCall in the top five in the entire state. On Monday, she also became the school's all-time leading scorer, passing current MVAO-COU teacher Jessica Christensen's record of 1,372 points. She's one of four seniors leading the state in scoring. Because of that, McCall earned this week's Siouxland Athlete of the Week. It wasn't an easy path for McCall to get to this point, however. When McCall rehabilitated her arm, she lost some feeling in her hand because of nerve damage sustained in the injury. The West Monona coaching staff at the time had McCall dribble the basketball with her right hand, At first she said it hurt badly from the pain. She got some of her strength back in April and May. To this day she has to hold the ball differently because of the nerve damage and has made a lot of little adjustments. The coaching staff tried to persuade McCall that she could return to playing at the level that she wanted to. McCall tried to keep those thoughts out of her head, too. The thought only entered my mind a couple of times, that I wasn't going to play again, McCall said. The coaches forced it on me, and I just did it. I think it was very important for my mental health, just because I didn't want to do it and not be able to because of a freak accident. It helped me to know that I could do it. A lot of my teammates would have been freaked out if I never came back. McCall went through the summer playing AAU ball, trying to get her confidence back. She believed she got it back during the regular season of her junior year. McCall wasn't scared to get hurt again, and she was happy to be on the floor. She wasn't pressured to score as much, nor was she forced to be relied on to be the best defender. That confidence has been growing, especially in the last two seasons. During her junior year, McCall led the Spartans in scoring with 558 points. She shot 47% from the floor and 62.5% from the free throw line. She averaged 24.3 points per game, and she averaged 8.3 rebounds per game. So far this season, McCall has been averaging a double-double. The Spartan senior has averaged 24.5 PPG and 10.5 RPG. She's even averaging 4.3 offensive rebounds per game. Her single-game season-high in points came December 11th against OABCIG, where McCall scored 37. That's good for being in the top 10 statewide for most points in a 2020-2021 game. She's a great kid to be around, and she comes to work every day, Cool said. Every good team has to have a go-to player, and she is that type of person. We just keep challenging her to be better. One night she was, for example, 0-for-4 from the 3-point range. The next two nights she was 3-for-3 and 4-for-4. She gets her lunch pail and she just gets back to work. She knows where she's at with those types of things, Cole said of McCall. She has the abilities to be up there like that. Well, everyone, we've reached the halfway point. You're listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 14th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Maxine D. Rising from Sioux City. Maxine Dolores Rising, age 79, of Sioux City, passed away on Monday, January 11th. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at Good News Baptist Church, with Pastor John Woodford officiating. The family will greet friends from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the church, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, assisting with the arrangements. Maxine Dolores, the daughter of Edward Joseph and Edna Evelyn Kratz Jolin, was born November 20, 1941, in Sioux City. Maxine grew up in Sioux City, and she attended St. Boniface Catholic School. On July 22, 1960, Maxine was united in marriage to Frank G. Rising in Elk Point, South Dakota. This union was blessed with four children. The family made their home in Sioux City, then moved to Davenport, Iowa, and returned back to Sioux City in 1982. When Maxine was in her 50s, she proudly received her GED, which led her to receive her cosmetology and CNA licenses. In 2005, Maxine moved to Niobrara, Nebraska, and worked with her sister in their family business, Niobrara Trading Post. She recently moved back to Sioux City. Maxine was a very crafty person, and she loved watching movies. From Lawton, Iowa, Troy Charles Calhoun, age 83, died Tuesday, January 12, 2021. Services January 16th at 11 a.m., Southern Hills Baptist Church. Burial after the service, Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation January 16th from 9 to 11 a.m. at the church. Arrangements with Christy Smith Funeral Homes, Morningside Chapel. From Sioux City, Mary Lou Rood, age 91, died Sunday, January 10th, 2021. Graveside services, January 14th at 11 a.m., Buena Vista Memorial Park Cemetery, Storm Lake, Iowa. Arrangements with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sac City, Marjorie Glassnap, age 92, died Monday, January 11th, 2021. Services, January 15th at 10 a.m. It will live stream from farberotterman.com. Burial after the service, Oakland Cemetery, Sac City. Visitation, January 14th from 4 to 6 p.m. Farber and Ottoman Funeral Home in Sac City. From Sheldon, Iowa, Harold Eugene Hal Tuttle, age 93, died Thursday, January 7th, 2021. Private graveside services, January 18th, East Lawn Cemetery, Sheldon. No visitation. Arrangements with Vanderplug Funeral Home in Sheldon. From Sioux City, Alice Ann Elwanger, age 93, died Sunday, January 10th, 2021. Services, January 16th at 11 a.m., Nativity Catholic Church. Burial after the service, Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation, January 16th at 10 a.m. at the church. Arrangements with Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. From Sergeant Bluff, Richard R. Dick Chicoine, age 92, died Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. Services, January 18th at 10:30, Holy Cross Parish, St. Michael Catholic Church, Sioux City. Burial, Memorial Park Cemetery, with military honors. Visitation, January 17th, from 3 to 5 p.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sergeant Bluff, Elnora Jane Dose, age 85, died Monday, January 11th, 2021. Services, January 18th at 1 p.m., St. Matthew Lutheran Church, Mapleton. Burial, after the service, Mount Hope Cemetery. Visitation, January 18th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the church. Masks and social distancing are required. Arrangements are with Armstrong Benhouten Funeral Home in Mapleton. From Lamars, Iowa, formerly from Humboldt, Iowa, Marilyn Johnson. Marilyn Johnson, age 92, of Lamars, and formerly of Humboldt, passed away on Saturday, January 9, 2021, in Heartland Care Center in Marcus, Iowa. Service will be 2 p.m. on Friday at the United Methodist Church of Lamars. Visitation with the family present will be from noon until the service time on Friday at the church. Masks and social distancing are required. A private burial will be at Union Cemetery in Humboldt. Arrangements are with Rex Winkle Funeral Home of Lamars. Expressions of sympathy may be expressed to the family through rexwinklefh.com. Marilyn Joyce Curry was born on November 10, 1928, to George P. and Esther Bradbury Curry in Rolfe, Iowa. As a young girl, Marilyn attended the Baptist Church in Gilmore City, Iowa, where she accepted Jesus Christ as her Savior and was baptized in 1945. Marilyn graduated from Bradgate High School in 1946. She was working at the First National Bank in Humboldt as a bookkeeper when she met Delmar F. Johnson at a rural young people event in 1948. They were married on September 10, 1950, at the Baptist Church in Gilmore City. Delmar was drafted into the Army in 1951 and served in Korea while Marilyn worked at the Ben Franklin store in Pocahontas. In 1953, the couple moved to a farm near Manson, where Delmar worked as a hired man and began his lifelong work and love of farming. In 1960, the family moved to the Curry Farm, east of Bradgate. Marilyn supported the farming operation and raised four children. Marilyn succeeded in a goal to have each of her children obtain a college degree. She loved to cook and had large gardens to provide nutritious meals and extensive sewing of clothes for herself and her children. Marilyn's sewing and her ability at artistic design led to other creative outlets. She designed and sewed many quilts, which were given to family members or donated for church projects. She also developed a love of watercolor painting. Marilyn painted several full-size works, but more recently she painted hundreds of greeting cards. Flowers, birds, and rainbows were among her favorites. She was trained in calligraphy. She also crocheted over 100 prayer shawls, which were given to her church to assist in her ministry, in ministering to those who were grieving or had other significant prayer needs. Marilyn was a member of the United Methodist Church, first at Bradgate, then Humboldt, and later LaMarche. She provided an example of faith to the family, taught Sunday school, and served in many capacities. She and Delmar had a heart for missionary work. They supported the Heifer Project in Arkansas, the Red Bird Mission in Kentucky, as well as the annual United Methodist Ingathering event. Marilyn donated quilts and Delmar woodworking projects that were auctioned to raise money for mission work. Also, they both held administrative positions for several ingatherings. Delmar passed in 2006, and Marilyn moved to LaMarche in 2011. Marilyn continued to manage the family farm since that time. From Sioux City, Judith K. Lucart, age 80, passed away Monday, January 11, 2021, at a local nursing home. A memorial mass will be held at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences may be made to meyerbroschapels.com. Judith was born on October 7, 1940, in Sioux City to Paul and Nellie McLean Warner. In 1959, she was united in marriage to Floyd Mick Lucart in Sioux City. Together, they camped and traveled on motorcycle around the United States, visiting 44 different states. Judith worked at Zenith for 10 years and American Popcorn for 23 years before retiring. She was a member of Sacred Heart Catholic Church and enjoyed gardening and her weekly coffee meetings with her friends. From Sioux City, Annette Tuhig, spelled T-W-O-H-I-G. Annette Tuhig, age 50, passed away Monday, December 28, 2020, at UNMC Hospital, surrounded by her family. A private family memorial mass will be held with burial in St. John's Cemetery in Jackson, Nebraska. Christy Smith Funeral Homes, Larkin Chapel, is assisting the family with arrangements. Annette was born on February 22, 1970, in Sioux City. She was the daughter of James and Judy Miller Tuhig, and the oldest of six children. Annette attended school at Willis Elementary until eighth grade and graduated from Ponca High School in 1988. After graduation, Annette moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, where she resided at the time of her passing. Annette enjoyed being outdoors and loved horses. She was very environmentally responsible and took recycling very seriously. Along with nature, Annette also liked music and was very artistic. She was known to sit for hours and work on crossword puzzles. She enjoyed helping others through volunteering. Annette greatly loved her many nieces and nephews. From Sioux City, Carol L. Archer, age 80, died Sunday, January 10, 2021. Services, January 15, at 1 p.m., Calvary Lutheran Church, Sioux City. Live stream available at calvaryleeds.com. Burial after the service, Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation, January 14, from 6 to 8 p.m., at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Winnebago, Nebraska, Michaeline K. Parker. Michaeline K. Parker, age 57, of Winnebago, passed away on Sunday, January 10, 2021. Services were held Tuesday. Arrangements are with the Winnebago Wake and Burial Program. Michaeline was born on September 27, 1963. She was enrolled in the Winnebago tribe and was a member of the Thunder Clan. On her father's side, Michaeline was a descendant of the Omaha tribe. She grew up in Winnebago and graduated from Riverside Indian School in Anadarko, Oklahoma. In 1985, Michaeline married Vernon Mike Maxwell. They made their home in Winnebago and also in Homer, Nebraska. They later divorced. Michaeline was a longtime employee of the Winnebago tribe. She was especially close with the Mauna God and spent many hours in prayer. Michaeline is survived by her sons, William, Jake, and Vernon, 8 grandchildren, 8 siblings, and her nanny, Louie Mae Hunter of Winnebago. That concludes today's obituaries for today. Here's a feature article by Earl Horlick. Mural Man, Artist Chelstad, reflects on a bohemian life, befriending artistic biggies and living out his dreams. On an otherwise quiet Saturday afternoon, Paul Chelstad's cell phone was in constant ping mode while sitting on a table in his living room. That was because friends of the Sioux City-based artist were alerting him to the goings-on at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. Only a few days earlier, rioters had ransacked the Capitol as legislators voted to affirm President-elect Joe Biden's victory. 5 people were killed, including 2 police officers. There are certain years in which you say to yourself, "What the heck is going on?" Chelstad said with a groan. Such "what the heck is going on" years included 2001, when terrorists destroyed the World Trade Center, which resulted in nearly 3,000 fatalities on September 11th, as well as 1968, which saw the assassinations of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr., and the murder attempt on the life of artist Andy Warhol. "I think 2020 will go down as a what the heck year," Chelstad noted as his cell phone continued. "But it's now 2021. See, 2020 refuses to leave," he said. "That's how bad things have gotten that." Despite that, times of strife can also prove productive for artists. Indeed, Just Say Yes, a show featuring several of Chelstad's more politically provocative pieces, will be featured at an exhibit that starts 6 p.m. January 29th at the Sioux City Conservatory of Arts, the Block Gallery, at 1307 Pierce Street. Probably without meaning to, Trump has inspired more protest art than any other recent U.S. president, he said. Born in Sioux City in 1948, Chelstad is best known locally for the large murals that greeted music fans at the former Uncle John's Records, or the outdoor graffiti-style mural at Rockland Manufacturing Company. However, the self-professed street artist has art on display around the world. That's not too bad for Chelstad, who was encouraged to pursue art at an early age by parents Norman and Kathleen Chelstad. "Other parents would try to get their kids to consider more realistic dreams," he said with a chuckle. "Not my mom and dad." It certainly helped that Chelstad's best friend in elementary school was a girl named Mary Lynn. "Marilyn was the only Chinese school at my school, and her family was one of the few Asian families in Sioux City," he said, smiling at the memory. "She was exotic in a way I knew I could never be." Eventually, Marilyn and her family moved to Southern California. Years later, she became known as M.K. Yee, an award-winning photojournalist who spent more than 4 decades at the New York Times. "I still keep in touch with Marilyn and her husband," Chelstad said. "They're fabulous people." Indeed, Marilyn's example may have inspired Chelstad to leave the safe confines of home and see the world. Initially studying art at Wayne State College in Wayne, Nebraska, he transferred to the University of Southwestern Louisiana, moving to New Orleans in the late 1960s. New Orleans was as close to living in a foreign country as you could get without actually moving abroad, Chelstad said. It was the period of time when novelist John Kennedy O'Toole originally wrote A Confederacy of Dunces, and it was a glorious living a bohemian lifestyle. Working as an art instructor, a sales clerk, and New Orleans' worst waiter, he continued to paint whatever he could. I didn't have much money, but I got to be an artist for a while, Chelstad said, adding ironic quotation marks for emphasis. Still, he returned to Sioux City in 1975. I was burnt out, Chelstad said of his 5-year return. I needed to be home. He eventually settled in New York in 1980, during a heady era when such artists as Keith Haring and Jean-Michel Basquiat were making waves with graffiti-inspired pop art. So was Alex Valure, a Brazilian-born pioneer in street art who befriended Chelstad, introducing him to stenciling on public walls throughout Greater New York. Alex and I were graffitiing up Little Italy one night when we were stopped by a couple of cops, Chelstad explained. The cops could have arrested us on the spot, but they didn't. They just turned around, saying Alex and I had real talent. Fashion designer Patricia Field, who did Six of the City and The Devil Wears Prada, obviously agreed. One of Chelstad's originals, which weirdly featured Andy Warhol lifting up his shirt to show off scars from his assassination attempt, hung in her store for years. Eventually, Chelstad left New York to care for his aging parents in Sioux City. Yet the experiences he encountered could fill a library of biographies. For instance, Chelstad will never forget the time when British-born raconteur Quentin Crisp invited him for a glass of whiskey in his apartment. Or how about the time when Chelstad and his childhood friend MKE traveled with chain-smoking aboriginals for a photo shoot? New York was a very different place back then, he said wistfully. That's for sure. Many of the artists Chelstad looked up to died at a young age. Basquiat died from a heroin overdose in 1988, while Haring died from AIDS in 1990. Even his friend and mentor Alex Valari succumbed from AIDS in 1987. I remember testing for AIDS and was completely devastated when the doctor told me I was negative, Chelstad said. I fought the doctor, insisting I'm the most positive person in the world. Then the doctor said, testing negative for AIDS was a good thing. While his cell phone continued to ping with news updates, Chelstad grabbed himself a beer from the fridge. This beer is called Lager Simpler Times and is brewed by a company called Grain Belt, he said, reading the label. Apparently, it was brewed in a simpler time before good beer was discovered. That's okay, since Chelstad acknowledged that we are living in such a crazy time. I've made it through one pandemic, AIDS, pretty well, Chelstad said, knocking on wood. If I can stay away from COVID, I'll make it through pandemic number two. He'll be fine as long as he has his art. People ask, will I ever retire? Chelstad said, shaking his head. When they'll eventually take me out of my house, feed first, I'll have my art supplies in my hands. Here's some more short feature stories from Sioux City. You're going to have a serious ghost problem on your hands. It's one of the ugliest crimes, stealing from those who have absolutely no way to defend themselves because they've been dead for almost 125 years. The Wayne County, Nebraska Sheriff's Office wrote in a December 29th Facebook post that an old gravestone was found abandoned and may have been stolen from a cemetery in or near Wayne. The individual whose weathered headstone was stolen apparently died as a child in 1896. On January 2nd, the sheriff's office announced in a subsequent Facebook post that the cemetery had been located. It's unclear if there are any suspects in the theft. The Cherokee County community of Larrabee stays out of the news much of the time. Then something like this happens. A Cherokee, Iowa man was arrested on charges of firing shots at a house and car in nearby Larrabee. The Cherokee County Sheriff's Office was dispatched to the home on January 1st after taking a report of vandalism. Deputies investigating the report found a car and a house had been shot numerous times. Joseph Llewellyn, age 29, was arrested and charged with firing the shots earlier on Friday. He was charged with 2 counts of second-degree criminal mischief, felon in possession of a firearm, carrying weapons, and reckless use of a firearm. Theft in the six figures It's unclear what exactly was taken, but obviously it was pretty valuable stuff. A Dakota Dunes man faces charges of taking up to $500,000 worth of property from a North Sioux City company. A Union County grand jury on December 14th filed a 2-count indictment against Joshua McElroy, age 33, charging him with grand theft and embezzlement of property received in trust. It is not known exactly what type of property was taken. An arrest warrant was served on December 28th, and McElroy posted bond. The indictment alleges that from May 1st, 2017 through April 15th, 2020, McElroy took or exercised unauthorized control over property belonging to Murphy Insulation, Inc. and or Murphy Mechanical Insulation, Inc., valued at more than $100,000, but less than or equal to $500,000. Going back to some sports stories. Hot start leads to SBL win. Warriors score first 19 points in a victory over Crusaders. By Barry Poe. With four quick flips of Jake Lehman's wrists, Sergeant Bluff Luton was off and running against the Sioux City Bishop Heelan boys here on Tuesday. Lehman splashed 4 3-pointers in the first quarter, and Sergeant Bluff Luton scored the first 19 points of the game en route to a 59-31 victory. "Our seniors did a great job tonight and did what they had to," Sergeant Bluff Luton coach Adam Vanderschaff said. "I thought our energy in the first quarter was really good. We looked like we were ready to play tonight, which was good to see. It was nice to see Jake Lehman making some shots. He hasn't shot it quite like he can up to this point, but we see it every day. He's a good shooter." Southwest Minnesota State recruited Lehman, who led the Warriors now 4-5 overall and 2-4 in the Missouri River Conference, with 14 points. Nick Muller matched Lehman with 4 trays and tacked on 12 points. Sergeant Bluff Luton was 12 for 25 from behind the arc. Brady Schapp was also in double figures with 10 points. And Majak Majuk, another Southwest Minnesota State-bound Warrior, contributed 7 points and 10 rebounds. Junior Jacob Emming, meanwhile, scored 9 points. Prep Wrestling. Number 9, Woodbury Central, beats number 3, West Sioux. Woodbury Central came into Tuesday's duo against West Sioux with a 19-0 record. However, West Sioux is the first team in Woodbury Central's schedule ranked in the top 10, as the Falcons are ranked number 3 in Class 1A by IA Wrestle. Woodbury Central's undefeated record earned the Wildcats a number 9 ranking. Woodbury Central's 20th victory ended up being a statement win. Ty Dennison opened the duel with a pin at 182 pounds for Woodbury Central, but West Sioux got back-to-back pins from Juan Tapiet, 195, and Ashton McMillan, 220, for an 11-6 lead. The Wildcats didn't trail for long, getting a pin from Warren Smith at 285 to retake the lead. Woodbury Central didn't trail again, as Smith's win sparked 6 wins in the next 7 matches for the Wildcats, leading to a 48-27 victory over number 3 West Sioux at the Long Lines Family Rec Center. "I think we wrestled well. We can always do better, and there are things to work on," Woodbury Central coach Jake Thomas said. "I did see a lot of good things going on, and we did what we needed to get the win. The guys came out strong in their matches. Give the guys credit for stepping up in this environment. It was fun seeing them celebrate their big wins." Woodbury Central ended last season at the 1A state duels, but the Wildcats went 0-3. Since then, the Wildcats haven't lost a match, with a lineup that features a mix of some familiar faces in key spots, along with a few new faces that are making an impact for the Wildcats, who just knocked off a West Sioux program that finished in 3rd place at back-to-back 1A state duels. "I think they have made strides, and that's what we preach, putting in the work and getting better. And for them to go out and do that, it's special, and it's been fun to watch," Thomas said. They have found ways to get better and to work on things they need to. That's what happens when guys want it like they do. Helin pressures SBL, gets 7th straight win. It certainly wasn't pretty, but the Sioux City Bishop Helin girls basketball team kept its winning streak alive here on Tuesday night. Despite turning the ball over 25 times, the Crusaders found enough buckets to edge Sergeant Wolf Luton 43-40 for their 7th consecutive victory. Helin, which has won 7 in a row since dropping its first 2 games of the season, rallied in the 4th quarter to overtake a mistake-prone SBL squad. Sergeant Bluff Luton, now 4-4 after its 3rd straight loss, committed a whopping 31 turnovers. Trailing by 3 points at the end of the 3rd quarter, Helin outscored the Warriors 15-9 in the final 8 minutes. Well, everybody, I guess we're going to have that be the end for today. I apologize for all the errors I made today. That does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 14th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.